And a very good morning to you. This is the Tuesday edition of Down to Brass Tacks. You can reach us by calling 434-1790. You can send a WhatsApp message to 266-IVOB, which is 266-4862. Or you can send an email to brasstacks@starcomnetwork.net. John Stout is taking care of things technical. I'm Dennis Johnson. I'll be your host, and we go until 1:30 today. Since the government of Barbados put out the online survey, people have been commenting online. People have been sending their WhatsApp messages, some letters to the editor I've read as well, and the comments on the various government agencies and what they think should and should not be done with them. The Caribbean Broadcasting Corporation seemed to be one of the places heavily focused on, and I heard colleague David Ellis on more than one occasion mentioning the Transport Board and the National Housing Corporation. My focus, however, differs slightly. There are some other agencies that, while I don't question the validity, I question the way they're being, their effectiveness at present. For example, the Office of the Ombudsman. Can anyone tell me 10 things the Ombudsman has done over the last 10 years? One for every year. That made the public, you know, came to public attention. It was reported somewhere in a report. I have no idea what the Office of the Ombudsman has done or is doing, and whether or not the public is satisfied with an Office of the Ombudsman. I could say the same thing about Office of Public Counsel, but I've spoken to them on occasion, and they've pointed out some of the things they have done and some of the challenges they face. We had a complaint last time I was on from a young lady who talked about flour and the response that she got from the various agencies that she attempted to get a satisfactory response from. And what was interesting was I received a message from a legal, a person in the legal profession who said, read the caller complaining about, where is it? There was a message I got about that that said it was not the, it was the Fair Trading Commission. The Fair Trading Commission has jurisdiction over consumer safety in relation to consumer goods supplied by any person in Barbados, and the minister responsible for consumer affairs can issue safety regulations governing supply of consumer goods and can make suppliers issue recall notices and can issue recall notices directly in case where it appears the goods create an imminent risk of death, serious illness or injury. It is an offense to supply unsafe consumer goods. Suppliers and directors thereof, whether supplier is a body corporate, are liable to fines or imprisonment or both where the offender is an individual. That, of course, came from someone in the legal profession. That's why the language may sound legalese. In other words, they were quoting a statute, I presume. Which led me to question the Fair Trading Commission. When it was first set up, there was a certain officer, I think she was the CEO at the time, who was quite amenable to appearing on various programs and discussing the objectives and things that the Fair Trading Commission was pursuing. Don't know the last time I heard any of the officers there in public discussing anything or laying the fears of the public. I'm not saying they're not needed, just asking about the way they operate. Which leads me to the last one, which may be a little bit surprising since I think we need one, and that is the Financial Services Commission. There was an incident involving an insurance company that had problems across the region where it was in the public domain that certain invoices were not for the purposes of which they were presented to said insurance company. What became of it? Did the Financial Services Commission investigate? Was anybody held to account? What happened? Do we know? Maybe it's not in the public domain what happened. But yesterday's front page of the newspaper brought them back into focus. Because in the case involved with the Insurance Corporation of Barbados, sorry, ICBL, let me call them by the name that they're known, it said that $94,000 in net profits came from ill-gotten contracts, and that because of the swift action of the company involved, that they notified the U.S. and they took action, removing their executives. And because of that, they were quote-unquote cleared. And the profits, $93,940 that it made from, and I'm quoting the newspaper, illegal transactions, was paid into the United States Treasury. And the ICBL also fired the executives and employees involved in the matter. Now, my question is this. If they informed the U.S., did they inform the Financial Services Commission in Barbados? If not, why not? And if they did, what action was taken? And if these transactions happened in Barbados involving Barbadians and the profits were made in Barbados, why Uncle Sam get paid $93,000 U.S.? The questions were raised by a friend of mine. I thought they were interesting questions, so I read the article to see if there was validity to their questions or whether they were shooting the breeze. And after I read the article, I came to the same conclusion that they came to. I had legitimate questions to be asked. I don't know. This is Dr. Brass Tacks. Good morning.
Hello, good morning, Mr. Johnson.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, how are you?
Hey, I'm all right, and you?
Not too bad. A couple of things here. Mm-hmm. I last on the program, I listened for a short while because I had to go. I think found it, the time that I was listening to be quite interesting concerning
breast cancer.
The topic that y'all had last on the
cancer?
Cancer, breast cancer, different kind of cancers. My takeaway remains that if you had to look at, you know, when the first man was created, Adam, and then they create the woman. Do you think that they were creative in these cancers? And that was a question that was asked to me.
I don't know. I have no idea. I have no idea.
Right. But you know that the cancer cells are there for a purpose.
So I suppose all cells are for a purpose. Some of them some of them affect us badly and some of them don't. For example, the immune system is supposed to protect us from germs, but sometimes the immune system attacks us because of some fault or flaw.
But you also know that you can get these cancer cells removed, but if you remove them, they're sort of off balance the body. So therefore, the question would be, you know, if God has planned, why would he put them there to be destructive to mankind?
I have no idea why the Creator does what he does, so why he did what he did. When I see him, I might ask him, but I don't know. Perhaps when I see the Creator, I will ask him, but I don't know why he did the things he did or why he does the things he does.
But the question I would like to get to ask on Sunday is, how many survivors of breast cancer do we have in Barbados? Because the percentage of people who die from breast cancer in Barbados and the United States is very high. Especially, I was looking at some surveys that's done here. The United States, partly, breast cancer affects mostly white women in the States, funny enough.
Well, they got more white women in the States, I suppose, than any other. So once you gather them from a greater pool, the statistics may be greater. But, sir, I know people who have survived breast cancer they've had their breasts removed. They've had treatment. One I know lived to the ripe old age of 94. So, you know, there are always the statistics that say this and there are statistics that say that.
But you're right, because there are a few that will
survive.
That's right. Because I remember that there was a lady there, but one time the doctors told her she had to take her operation. She said, I'm not taking the operation, and she lived in 94.
Mm-hmm.
You understand? So, most probably she had the operation. God knows if she would.
What would have happened?
Yeah. The other thing, Mr. Johnson, the issue is probably, it is satisfactory now?
I have no idea. The last I heard, they were still draining the swamp, and Worthen Beach was closed. I have not seen sewage in the road, but I don't know what's the state of the extractor wells or how far they've got with trying to remove whatever clogs there were in the system. I haven't heard anything about it after that.
My last thing, which is your favorite, no tourism. When you were at Paradise, there was something known as slippy. Anyhow, you will get the what you call short term guests that will come there for a couple of nights. You all will have these things set up, bands every night playing at Paradise, that they could enjoy themselves, and then the different tours that you all used to put on over there, which you all had a good thing going on at Paradise.
Cost half $1 million a year.
I would know that. And the facilities were outstanding, the bars were nice and everything.
Yep.
The problem over it is that after that, I find that the tourism problem now has dropped. You're charging more money, and the quality is not as like before. Even with the whole Hilton, the whole thing was high, one of those high flyers. But the quality, the production, what the result is what the tourist is looking at. Because they were just here looking at some remarks that were made to white tourists that came to Barbados, and all of them come up with the same thing. Price is high.
Yeah, let me tell you, there were two programs that were run when I was at Paradise. One was called the Sail and Stay Package, where people would sail on a canard ship for a week and then stay at the hotel for a week. And then there was the Sun Now, See Later Package, where they would stay at the hotel for a week and then they would go off on the ship for a week. There was also a program that was run with the Concorde, where people would come in on the QE2 and fly out on the Concorde over the Christmas period. The thing is, when people sailed first and stayed at the hotel afterwards, we got bad reviews. When they stayed at the hotel first and then went on the ship, we had good reviews. And what we saw was a difference in the level of service that they received on the ship as opposed to what they received on land, which caused them to give the comments. The other thing was, there was nightly entertainment. It was a variety. You had everything from the Sing Out Barbados to the Country Theatre Workshop to individual artists and bands. We had outdoor, indoors. What has happened over a period of time? I remember during the Oronatha administration, just after the Hilton was built, and there was a one of these talk sessions down there, I asked, where after rebuilding the Hilton, where were the areas where you could have entertainment? And the question went unanswered because people went off to ask other questions. But one of the things that have happened over the years is that, apart from, I think, when Haywards changed ownership and was being managed locally, they actually had a thriving entertainment. They had a manager of entertainment. They had bands. They had artists performing there. They had a thriving entertainment package. A lot of the hotels have scaled back on their entertainment, and they've gone for one-man combos, DJs sometimes. But this whole aspect of nightly entertainment and a nightlife seem to have died from the hotel circuit. And even somebody complained, I think last week, that the clubs along the St. Lawrence Gap area, a lot of them have changed. People complain about noise. And nightlife in general has taken a nosedive for various reasons.
But you notice that, Mr. Johnson, in those days you're talking about, most of your guests were at the club, you know.
But that's true.
That was one of the most popular clubs in Barbados at that time.
Yeah, and they used to be, as you said, they used to be going to the Plantation Garden Theatre. They used to go out a lot. You know, you had tours taking them out and night activities for them to do. There was a lot more, I think, right? I mean, under correction.
Right, then I have to overhaul the tourism product that we have. But otherwise, we are going to lose out to places like Santo Domingo and Cuba, who have a different experience. Experience is different. And plus, those people have
heavy cultural experience. Very heavy on culture.
That's right, especially the Japanese and the Chinese rich tourists. This is why I come to Barbados and go to shopping mall to buy a watch, ready to buy on a ship. A lot of people think because when they come here, they're rich, that the why had to spend all this money, but a lot of rich people don't spend money like that.
And the other thing is, the cruises are very interesting places. I went to observe a couple of them. I took one and then I went to observe on one. Depending on what port they go into, the night before they dock at the port, they have sales on the ship, where they bring out duty-free items and watches and all kinds of things to try to soak up your money so that you don't have any by the time they get to the port. So we lose out that way too.
All right, thank you.
Thank you as well, sir. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Brass Tacks, good morning.
Morning, Dennis.
Hi, morning.
How are you?
I'm all right, and you?
I'm fairly all right.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how to start it. This thing that happened to yesterday is our son. I would like to know how much more happenings like that is going to happen before something is done. And all blame cannot be put on no one individual or no one institution. They have to be a blending of minds. Now, for instance, I've been saying, we have the BDF up there, people who are trained in security, tough security.
They're not even police officers, eh? They're not police officers, eh?
I didn't hear that, Dennis.
They are not police officers.
Yeah, but what you can do, you don't have to put them out there in soldier uniforms. Go to parliament and go over to Gordo and put them in a special uniform to assist the police. That's all.
To do what?
I
assist the police to do what?
In order to
sir,
time.
I just told you they're not police officers.
But you didn't hear my response.
I heard what you said, but what you can do? Go to parliament and turn soldiers into police officers?
So we've been doing the meantime. Watch all the nonsense that goes on in Zarastan, going on.
But the nonsense.
Program and complain about it.
Sir, but the nonsense that goes on in the Zarastan is not isolated to the Zarastan and is not a Zarar problem. I keep trying to drive that in, but apparently I'm the only person who thinks so. There is a problem in this country with violence. There's a problem in this country with people losing control too quickly for silly reasons. There are people who no longer seem to be in control of themselves, either because of the substances they consume or the type of lifestyle they are living. It is being manifested in the Zarastan because of the concentration of people there and the hustling and hassling that goes on. So if you shove people into a drain, what do you expect them to do? They're not going to behave as though they're lying on the beach sipping rum and coke and beer. So the problems in the Zarastan is aggravated by several issues, including violence in the society in general.
Yeah, you may be right to a point, but good. I can also bring, I'm not saying that what you're saying is not true, but I can also bring another aspect of it. I can use tree lanes.
Mm-hmm.
That are role models to the others to follow, but for some strange reason, people tend to follow negativity rather than follow the positive way. We can talk about the sevens, the route sevens, the route eight, the route nine, and as we keep on talking about it, other people have been keep on talking about it. Even on bank holidays, these people line up. These people do the right thing. I'm not saying that they're perfect. None of us are perfect, but why? This is foolishness, Dennis. And you've got to do something about it. It can't always be a pat on the back. I really would like Mr. Morrisley to come in the studio.
He's been in the studio on several occasions, sir.
And let's have discussion about this because he is well aware of what caused the problem. So don't be fooled.
Sir,
he's well aware.
Sir, there are people who cannot, quote unquote, come in the studio and say certain things. Mr. Lee has been in the studio on more than one occasion. He has outlined plans for the sector. He's sent WhatsApp messages. He's called in on occasion. What do you want him to do that he hasn't done before?
You mean for almost 40 years we hear the same thing all the time? Huh? Talk is what it is. Talk. If you keep on telling the truth, I want you in my house at 8 o'clock at night, and you try to keep on coming at 8:30 and 9 o'clock, and you keep on saying the same thing. I'm trying to go out of respect for you. Lock the door. And that's putting it simple. Sometimes we have to make decisions that don't make us popular, and you know it too, Dennis. I have learned this from you. You have taught me a lot, and I'm saying this to impress you. You, between you, my grandparents, and my parents. Even as a parent, you make decisions sometimes that your own children hate you. So what they can do, you're making decisions in your child's interest. They may not say that at the time, But sooner or later, you know what? They're going to look back and they're going to say, we might be in our graves. I thank my mother and my father for what they have done. They cannot, we have to come up with some way, with something.
Sir, I don't disagree.
I know him for over 40 years. I cannot say anything bad about that man, even if I wanted to.
Sir, I am not saying...
The SEC, you were involved in this book. You were going to try to settle it. He didn't deserve what he get. Don't matter whatever the reason, he didn't deserve it.
Sir, nobody deserves to be stabbed. Nobody. Sir, nobody deserves to be stabbed. Come. You know that. Nobody deserves to be stabbed. Nobody.
No, listen, Dennis. Mm-hmm. They've got people, right, who get such a bed every day with the sole interest of making people miserable.
Okay, right. They don't know. They need help. So look, you're saying exactly what I said to you just now, that there's a level of violence, underlying. Somebody asked me why I think everything I say is gospel, and you're right. I don't think everything I say is gospel. I have an opinion. Mr. P and I have different opinions, and we share it with each other from time to time. He tries to open my mind to certain things, and I try to open his mind to certain things. It's called a conversation. People in this country seem to have lost the art of conversation, which is one of the things I'm talking about. The problem we have, sir, when you look in the newspaper, right, sir, and you see a fella slap another fella in court because his elbow bunks him, that's not the ZR stand. That's in court. Two men in court. A man elbow bunks another one and he scrambles him in court. Hold on. You can't say that somebody deserves anything because they're bad behaved. We have a problem with our public transportation. We have a problem with our privately owned transportation. You see, the head of the transport authority said they're going to give the private contractors a seat on the board. That's a step in the right direction because now they're around the same table talking. And I know you'll be happy with that. The next thing, we have to decide how we rationalize what's happening out there. I don't like that ZR stand. Even with what they've built there, with all the other things around it, it's not a pleasant place to be. And then you're talking again about the way they're paid or not paid, as the case may be. We have some issues that we got to deal with.
All right, you know, Dennis, that when I got PTA meetings, most times, the children, parents who behave good at county meetings.
Yeah, I know that. But also, you know how many times people have said that once the police go, the behavior gets worse? You've heard
Repeat
that.
I didn't hear that.
You know that people have said that when the police are outside in the van stand, the behavior changes. When they move, the behavior changes again.
Yes.
Right.
Now, I can't really need to do right because everything that happens, there's always a reason.
Agreed.
Always.
Agreed.
I think what I would advise the new transport authority to do is to have a meeting with all stakeholders, including the drivers and the conductors. Listen to their grievances. Mm-hmm. Listen to the causes. Try to work with them for once because of it going on, clearly nobody is trying to work with them.
But
try
do you
to
know,
work with them.
You know, the owners have sent proposals, detailed proposals to the authorities before, right? And they've sent them again, as far as I know. Because I saw an outline, as I told you, Mr. Lee and various other members of the sector, I talked to them, and they showed me a document outlining a series of things that they would like to see implemented, including things like removing a conductor from a bus and how to discipline their membership. It was written by the owners themselves. It wasn't written by any government authority. Why not?
Yeah, because
where we are with it, I don't know.
There got to be a solution somewhere.
I agree with you, know, sir.
Be a solution.
But I just don't like to see the army being employed in police duties. The optics are bad. I don't know.
You know, if you don't know, we are in trouble.
No, there's a lot that I know. No, let me say to
you.
I'm
not saying you know everything.
No, but what I'm saying to you, I have seen the difference in behavior when people see the task force, for example, as opposed to policemen, especially young policemen, or even female police officers. There's a difference when you see the fellas in the heavy artillery and the flak jacket and the crash helmet, okay? They tend to instill a sense of, let me not do any foolishness. But there's some people who do it nevertheless.
Yeah. Okay, the mere fact, they had a policeman they used to call Rob Brown.
Yep.
A very good well. Man.
Yep.
Then that man goes into the stand. He a lawyer. You know, you would take you out of church already as all. Huh? So that alone suggests, whether it's Rob Brown or any other police officer, why did they have only to comply when someone is there to keep them in check?
Because that's the way they've been brought up. When the mother bring out the strap, it's too late to change for some people. When the mother bring out the strap, they behave. When the mother look at them and don't do nothing, they ain't bother. Like you say, if every time you come home, I tell you, stop coming late and I ain't do anything, you lose your respect for authority. I tell you, the sight of two men fighting in court because one elbow bunks the other one is a strange sight. People don't go in court and fight. People just be afraid to go in court in shackles, in handcuffs, and fight. That's a strange sight, sir.
I'm going to mention this. I should have mentioned this a long time ago. Mm-hmm. Mr. Douglas Frederick.
Mm-hmm.
I follow his cases.
Mm-hmm.
And words cannot explain how positive that man is.
Mm-hmm.
He gives everybody a chance.
Mm-hmm.
When you're given an opportunity to change, to be better, take advantage of it in a positive way.
Yeah.
My grandfather always tells us, the person who walks away is the stronger person. I don't might see you as a coward. By the end of the day, you don't have to sit down the police and say, I want effort to know. Walk away. Anyway, then, so listen, boys, get you. Have a nice day.
You too, my brother. Take care. Brass Tacks, good morning. Hello. 4341790, the Tuesday edition of Down to Brass Tacks. Good morning.
Hello, Dennis.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, this is John Goddard speaking.
Mr. Goddard, how are you, sir?
Yeah, not bad. What about you?
I'm good.
Yeah, I want to engage you a little bit on this integrity and public life bill.
Mm-hmm.
I listened yesterday with rapt attention to Sir David Simmons and my friend, Selmore Adeen. Mm-hmm. And I could see the passion in what they were saying. Now, Dennis, one of the concerns I have is that corruption is often taken in a very, and integrity too, in a very limited way in Barbados. We see it only as politicians thieving, as people say. And we also behave as though corruption in public life is a thing of the last 10 years or what have you. For years, Dennis, I believe you too, you've been in Barbados long enough to know that we've had several commissions of inquiry investigating alleged corruption and all that, and nothing has come of it. David's passion, I have some concerns about whether anything is really going to come of it. We cannot even in Barbados regulate the ZR situation, and you've best been talking with that about that with a previous caller. We, Dennis, do not monitor or enforce anything in Barbados. And I think you know that. I don't know that the new bill is going to make much of a difference because you cannot legislate morals. Integrity has to do with moral behavior, uprightness. It has to do with consistency of standards, which you hold yourself to. And so at the individual level, that is what we have to aim at. Now, corruption and dishonesty are endemic in this Barbadian society. Dennis, I don't know if you realize it, that if you hire an artisan to come to your house, he tries to rip you off if he feels you don't know much, especially some of the poor old ladies that don't know much about building costs and that kind of thing. You, even on the other side, you may have somebody working for somebody else. They charge a fee. The people agree. And then the person has to chase down the other party to get their money. Mm-hmm. People expect politicians to pay their light bill, water bill, telephone bills, we have become such a mendicant society that corruption is going to be very present for a very long time. Now, this does not mean that I don't think there ought to be systems in place of checks and balances. I think so. But what I want to suggest is this, Dan. You see, Auditor General, I have a lot of respect, not only for the post, but for the present person holding it. I know him well enough. I think the Auditor General in Barbados should be given power to call in the DPP and police to investigate
absolutely.
Some of the cases he identified.
Absolutely agree with you, sir. I say it makes no sense talking about integrity legislation if you don't say that the Auditor General says to somebody, produce the books by so-and-so, I have a discrepancy here, and if it is not rectified within such and such period, it's handed to the DPP for prosecution, further investigation, bring in people. You have to have that teeth, sir. You have to have that teeth.
No,
must. I agree with you wholeheartedly.
Yes, and departments of government, Dennis, have to be held accountable for not producing reports
on time.
I don't understand this nonsense of audited reports not being produced for 6 years.
I agree with you.
We allow this thing to get away. And unless Barbadians are prepared to hold themselves to high standards of accountability in their personal lives, we could talk until the cows come home. Because politicians are a part of this society. They're products of the society. They're going to politics having already imbibed a lot of the cultural norms, because I think it's now, dishonesty is now part of our cultural norms, unfortunately. And I don't know why we expect that they're going to adhere to the standards which we ourselves do not adhere to. So I respect Sir David's submissions. I respect my friend Fillmore's submission, and I even respect the government for attempting to do something about it. But the question is it going to be enforced? I know Fillmore said yesterday, and the Honorable Ralph Thorne responded. He said, and I don't know if you heard it, he said that Barbadians, in his research, he found that Barbadians were very doubtful whether we are going to get past a talk shop. And Ralph Thorne attempted to answer by trying to point out that they had gathered a lot of information from people. But that's not the answer to the question. You can have all the information you want. You can prepare the biggest and the greatest report you want. If there is no enforcement after that,
you go out the window.
Your work is in vain.
Yep.
And I think that's what the Barbadians are saying. People are not so sure. They're very skeptical.
You with me still? No. He's dropped out. His light is on, but I'm not hearing him. So I want to tell you I agree with a lot of what you've said. Hello?
Yes.
Okay, right. Yeah, I lost the air for a minute. Two things I think we need to look at. You made the point that there's some systemic things we have to work on. The fact that if people can get away with pulling a fast one in you or robbing you, they will, and it has become almost entrenched. And you talk about everything from contractors come right down to artisans. The other thing is finding men of integrity. Because when I look around, and I've made this point on the radio before, over the years, our institutions have been so, muddied, that we've lost a lot of faith in our institutions. I am sure when I was younger, we believed in the honesty and integrity of the church.
Very much so.
When you look around and you see all the accusations being thrown at priests and ministers of religion, you ask yourself, who can I trust if I can't trust my pastor? You used to have faith in the honesty and integrity of your police service. When you see police officers charged with underhand dealings, you ask yourself, can I trust my police officer? You look to your politicians, your judges, as being people of integrity. When you see prime ministers in various countries being brought down by all sorts of allegations, I mean, up to the office of the President of the United States. There was a story coming out of Australia that I shared with my colleague David Ellis about a talk show host who was convicted of taking $2.5 million in bribes, to not mention certain companies on his program. You know what his salary was, sir? $5 million a year.
Wow.
A man with $5 million a year contract takes $2.5 million in bribes? Really? And people say that if you pay him better, if you pay people better, they won't thief? No, I mean, seriously. I looked at it, I showed it to David, I said, David, take a read. I need a salary increase. And I laughed. But seriously, yeah. Sir, a man with a $5 million a year contract loses his job for taking bribes worth $2.5 million. Isn't that a strange thing?
Yeah, but it may appear strange, but it is very true. You see, given
I know it's true.
That's why I laugh when my friend, the Honorable Glenn Clark, and we are good friends,
talk about raising the salaries.
We need to pay the ministers more money. Has nothing to do with it.
Uh-huh.
Integrity doesn't come in the form of dollar notes.
It doesn't at all.
Right.
It doesn't at all. So I hope that this is not just another talk shop. I hope this is not just another report to be filed somewhere to say we've done it. I always point to the Bahamas that has Declaration of Assets and Integrity legislation the last time I checked. And I refer in particular to former Prime Minister Sir Lyndon Pendlin, who, when asked how on $60,000 a year, his assets increased by over $1 million in the next year when he declared his assets, he smilingly said, wise investments, and chuckled. And nobody asked him a question. And he was elected on more than one occasion.
I let you euphemism.
So did I. Nobody questioned it. He was elected on more than one occasion. He was knighted, and I think the airport was named after him.
That's right.
So, so much for Declaration of Assets.
Yes. Anyway, Dennis, thanks for engaging me.
It's always a pleasure engaging you, sir. You too.
Good. Okay. Bye.
This is Down to Brass Tacks.
So you have your